Hey, Redline Radio listeners, you can find us every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Chicago sports fans. This is Barstool Carl.
And Dave.
Chief.
Eddie.
This is Redline Radio and All Gas, No Break Chicago Sports Podcast, brought to you by Barstool Sports Chicago, brought to you by our good friends at Miller Lite. I know Dave wants to come right off the top, White Sox season's over, but there's a bigger story. Is there a bigger story?
We can start there.
Ed?
We can start there because I'm going
to I feel like just the Bears are so much bigger than everybody else rolled together. What do you got? Oh, you have some grievances?
Well, first off, Chief brought up how I haven't made amends with the puppy. And we're going to get to Bears. We're going to get to the Cubs. And, I mean, the White Sox in a second. But Danny's withholding the contact information from the puppy from the Muggsy billboard shoot. So as soon as I am able to connect with him, I will be making things right.
Well,
just want to
clarify.
Can
I say something?
That. What?
Since when do you let Danny push you around the ring? If
he's
you
not,
want that information, just, you would get the information.
I was just about to say this.
As a social puppet master, he likes the storyline. He likes to make memes and jokes like you guys do. So
last time I checked,
that's all that's happening.
Work for Danny.
I don't have passwords to the account, so I don't know.
Okay. What account is it?
I'm not sure what account it is, but he has the contact. I have all the
account passwords.
I don't think
you
do.
Yes, Dave.
With, right, the,
with the password. Well, this goes back.
I have.
You guys don't remember him having the password on the infamous Thomas Jones Day?
Oh, I do remember that. I do remember
I think
that.
That's when his password privileges probably got revoked.
No, I still got
them. I will say, like, having the password, not going to help you. I bet you that account gets littered
with
DMs. That was from 4 months ago.
It's
so
buried.
I hope that dog's doing well.
Second of all, second order of business, there was an article written in a Chicago news publication about tall bikes, and I think you guys all owe me an apology.
All right, what was the article, though? Because you can't just say there was an article written and all of a
just
sudden
about how there's like an actual group
of
like tall bikers.
So is it a support raising awareness article?
No, it was just like they documented what the group does.
Was it an op-ed that was even remotely negative about tall bikes?
No.
Was there anything that supported what you said when you drafted tall bikes?
But all I said was if it's a douchey move. That's all I said.
So I'm saying, was this publication,
and you
piece
guys,
of journalism, anything that even remotely supported the fact that they're douchebags? Or did it paint them as reasonable people, Ed?
But the point is not about douchey or not. The point is that you said they didn't exist.
Okay, now that's valid.
That's my point.
Have you seen them?
Yeah. Well, that's why I picked them.
I also have seen them. I didn't say they don't exist. I see them so infrequently that I can't possibly have any ounce of emotion evoked when I do see them. It's just a passing.
Well,
like,
I think it is
bike.
Actually a pretty surprising thing. Like, oh, that's a tall bike.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
what
Eddie's
about
doing
it,
is
minutes,
he's saying
two, 10
is
seconds later.
After making the recognition of the tall bike, then it skews negative. Oh, there's a tall bike. That guy's a douchebag.
Yeah, it's more so just the bike in itself. You know, it's just the tools and the mechanics go into it. I don't know the person personally. They could be a nice person, but
so
a
Chicago news publication writes it, now you feel validated? Come on, you're better than that.
But like, I mean, come on. you guys looked at me like I was an alien when I made that pick.
Well, it was a douchebag move draft.
Yes.
I think there are plenty of douchier moves than riding tall bikes.
But that was
now Jeffrey Dahmer's trending.
That was mine.
Wait.
Why are you
wait,
obsessed with trending
right,
today?
You're just tuning like, into this pre-show a lot of interruptions.
Can we stop
here.
Laughing?
But I don't understand.
Barstool's trending.
I think that's relevant.
What was the next one?
We work for Barstool.
Rick Hahn. Rick Hahn's trending.
Also relevant considering that is kind of my job to cover that team.
Jeffrey Dahmer's trending.
Yeah, that's why I did it with Dahmer, because it was complete.
It was a continuation on the show of a joke that wasn't on the show.
Well, it was a joke
is he
between
trending?
Us. Jeffrey Dahmer is, yeah. They're new Netflix series.
They're making a movie about him
or something. Yeah.
Evan Peters is
you're
starring
gonna
in it.
You're going to watch it. You're going to probably fucking download it.
I love that kind of shit. I'll watch it.
Yeah. You know like Evan Dahmer? Peters? Do I like Dahmer? No, I don't like Dahmer. Dahmer should have been caught well before he did.
Oh, those are some tragic stories.
Was it Dahmer or Gacy that hung out at the bar across
both
the street?
Of them.
It was both
of them?
Both
of
them,
yes.
Both correct.
How many other serial killers have been in? What is it called? L&L?
You know what? Tavern. We'll never know the true number.
Though. I've actually never been in there.
We'll never know how many.
I've been in there a couple times.
Nature of serial killing.
It's grimy.
One of the most disgusting bars you'll ever go into, but it's great.
It's awesome. That's right up my alley.
It is awesome.
And that's
you said that as a term of endearment.
There's nothing going on in that place. It's
nothing.
A great place. If you're the type of person that likes to just sit down and just have booze and be quiet, just mix that in a little 45-minute, take a shot, couple beers. I don't know if there's a better spot because no one will talk to you.
Fact.
At all.
Nope.
Sounds nice.
I like it. I've been there.
Yeah. So anyways, he's trending, Dave. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Tall bikes. Eddie sways the argument a little bit. You sway it a little bit.
Thank you.
They exist now.
Thank you.
Now what you need to do is...
And they have a whole Instagram page dedicated to them.
Well, you need to get people moving in the right direction. You need people trashing tall bikes now. You need someone, a real columnist, to step up on a Saturday morning. 2,000 words. Like the good old days.
Yeah. Should I call Rick Tallender?
Hey, Rick. Or no, who's the other one?
Michael Sneed.
The Northsider who did the golf. John. Teddy Greenstein.
Yeah, okay. Teddy.
Get I like him. Page. Is he still writing?
Oh, yeah. He's around.
Should get some local guys what's, in.
What else is going on in White Sox Dave world right now? Tom, any thoughts on White Sox Dave looking at his laptop and what's trending?
Just a lot.
Any thoughts at all?
Do I have any thoughts on White Sox Dave on his email?
Yeah.
I'm
raw dogging it today. Just
give
so you
us
know.
Your thoughts.
No computer, nothing.
We're on a show.
Okay.
Yeah.
David?
I'm here.
Thank you.
Promo code WSD for Merchapalooza on BarstoolSports.com.
When you say it like that, we mean something.
Well, it's a show that people are watching, and I don't know. It's a tough visual when Dave's just looking at his computer the whole time. That's all.
I got fan graphs pulled up for my hard hitting White Sox analysis. Tom,
we're not talking about White Sox.
He's preparing. I mean, the perfect time to prepare for your segment of the show is when the show starts.
Yeah,
so exactly. You got to get that up so it's fresh.
Give me something, Dave. Come on, camera's here.
Talk to me. Talk to me. Ask me questions. Pepper me.
Well, I mean, you're not like the star of the show. It's the four of us doing all this together.
Yeah, of course.
No, don't take it. Just be present.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'll say this. We can talk about White Sox last if we want to.
Well, yeah, let's do Justin Fields.
That would be great. Let's just get let's get our Justin Fields take out of the way because my sense is, as I'm teeing this up, is that the four of us are pretty much on the same page. That it's a big deal because he said it and it sounded bad and it can be taken out of context and that's just what people do, but we know that there's no malicious intent there.
I just don't think people realize the scope of all of this. Like, obviously in our world, Jersey Jerry tweeted about it. Dave Portnoy tweeted about it. And what are their motives here?
Okay.
They're stoking flames.
Exactly. I don't want to go full wind horse here, but that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay. He hates him. Jerry obviously hates him because of the autograph snafu. Dave obviously just likes to get under our skin.
Correct.
And big cat skin. So that's what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
The main account looks for engagement. So
the main account is.
They got their, 1,000 retweets?
I don't know who's running it today.
Yeah, I just got a text.
As of 7 minutes ago, they doubled down. We're like, this is a half apology and tag Barstool Chicago. Disavow.
So
I fucking disavow the main account and their spin on this. I'm with Justin Fields. He is right. He puts in more work, more film study, more fucking training, more reps, more practice time, all that shit. He does more work to contribute to the win. Maybe he fumbled, like, you know, who among us hasn't misspoken before? I'm probably going to do it 6 times on this show. So everybody just shut the fuck up And of course, like, he apologized sort of today, clarified, whatever you want to call it. It's, to me, it's a non, it was always a non-issue, because what he said was factually correct, and it just, everyone just shut the fuck up. Shut up.
Yeah, so 3,500 retweets on that main one. Like, yeah. That's what, all right, in the grand scheme, 3,500 of those, like, how many of those do you think are Packers fans, are Michigan fans, are just anti-Bears Justin Fields people?
They're,
majority.
We are, I would say, when it comes to the quarterback position, a fragile fan base, too.
Yes.
And after that game, where it was like, you know, it was poorly timed because people are already hot about it. And, like, I wrote the blog that a little bit of doubt starting to creep in for the first time with him after the only attempt 11 passes. So everybody's kind of on edge, but this is the wrong thing to get upset about. You want to get upset about, like, the on-field performance and whatever. I think that's fine. The quote, fuck. What are we talking about? Everyone just shut up. Relax. It's a quote. Clarified today. It was
but
never
a big
deal.
I don't think anyone fucking overreacted. I think it's all just troll shit.
Oh, come on, man. It's
all troll shit. Did you? Aaron Rodgers said fractionally of what Justin Fields said, we'd have we'd be trashing him, and we'd be leaning into it. So that's exactly what the other side is doing.
Yes, exactly.
It's a perfect storyline. The Bears have historic, awful quarterback issues. We've already anointed Justin Fields as, like, this guy's legit. He's the real deal. We lose by 17 on Sunday night. It's like the perfect narrative if you want to shit on us. So yeah, go ahead and shit on us. I'm trying to figure out. So are you? What are you?
I'm saying there's no Bears fans. Like, there's not a lot of Bears fans sitting here and be like, I can't believe he did this.
Oh yeah, no,
there were plenty.
I didn't see that. Very wrong.
The original tweet that went viral. I don't want to call it viral. They had a few thousand.
Did you see that?
I saw it. He goes, "You're on thin ice, pal." Or something like that.
Who said that?
The tweet that I saw at first that like spurred all of this.
It was the main account was Mikey Betts, I believe it was.
That's who it was. Yeah, yes. He goes, "You're on thin ice, pal." Unless he was, like, I don't know the guy.
I think there were a lot of Bears fans struck a nerve.
Did you see that, Lance?
Oh yeah, actually, like a majority of the fan base, or I guess it was kind of split, but it was very a lot of people. Yeah,
there are a lot of.
I'm not mad. I think it's a stupid comment. I'm not mad he said it. Like, I get what he's saying. I think it's very stupid.
It was clumsy.
I think if you're a quarterback, you can't fucking say the word fans and not have something super positive to say about others. Otherwise, don't bring it up.
Yeah, very good point. Very strong point.
I would say it's clumsily worded, but it's not inaccurate.
He also isn't. I mean, how often, last year even too, when the Bears were losing and stuff, like, writing's on the wall, Nagy's a fucking bum. Like, this is the first time he's standing in front of that podium with, like, the weight and the expectation everybody's saying. When he's at Ohio State, messing people up, high school.
Easy.
I mean, obviously a little adversity, Georgia. But my point is, like, how often has he been standing in front of a meeting room, he's probably as frustrated on Sunday night as he's ever been in his career.
And totally. He's not the best body language, like, non-monotone. He's pretty he's pretty damn monotone.
Yeah.
And, like, okay, that adds into it for sure. He was like, hey, man, the fans, like, they're just not in here. Like, there's a difference of how it could go down, but.
Tone matters.
Definitely.
Yeah.
When communicate, and these are all, what is he, 22, 23?
Yeah.
He'll learn that shit too. I'm sure he learned a lesson on this. You have to be careful with what you say. But you're right. This is the first time where he's had the spotlight and the pressure totally on him. He's, you know, he's got the C on his chest. He's second year quarterback. Everyone expects people to take a leap. We haven't seen it yet this year. I just think it's too early to be like, this guy's the fucking worst on the field or as a human based upon one game. And one quote. And I think that's where, like, it was the two of them happening in back-to-back days is where everyone, like, lost their fucking minds. But I think everything's going to be fine. Everybody just chill out.
I wouldn't go that far.
You don't think that he deserves more than two games underneath
the
coaching
staff? At his point on the Portnoy show,
everything's going
to
be fine.
Where Dave was like, well, you don't have a guy. You don't know what a guy is. Your point back to him about, like, we're a bottom five roster in the league.
Right.
We are.
We are a bottom five roster in the fucking league.
And I'm not, dude, just to be clear, like, if we're transferring over to away from the press conference and into the game, like, I'm not mad. Like, I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
I'm, like, still excited to watch the Bears. I mean, they're better than us. Like, it's hard to swallow when we don't think they are. But, like, you can't, like, dude, no. The Packers should beat us. Like, that's
in Lambeau. Like, what do we, like, and the fact they were in that game.
Yeah, if they until, get that, it's a touchdown game.
Yes. So they were, like, they performed better than I think a lot of people were assuming they would. And now it's like you have to, like, but you you got to start trending in the right direction, at least, even if you're not getting results. Like, the Texans is a game where it's like, this is a comparable opponent. You want to look much better against the Texans. And but against the Packers, I'll admit that when you go into a game and you were trailing the entire time and you only attempt 11 passes, only one of which was downfield,
that's... They're averaging like 9 yards a carry, though. So that's true. One thing where, yes, like, if you're establishing the run and then you're just like, well, we're just fucking running the ball down their throats.
Totally.
Dude, but it's disturbing because we still have this storybook that we think, like, continued because it's kind of been similar to the Nagy era so far, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, but, like, we just got to, like, push that shit away.
Right.
You know, this is a new, it's a new chat. It sounds cliche, but it really is.
Yeah.
But it's like, what, we're in a situation where we can't get our best offensive weapon and besides Montgomery and Darnell Mooney involved. This is Allen Robinson all over again. But it's like, no, like, you need to.
But, like, to your point, maybe and like, I
short memory.
Yeah. I don't know if they started bringing up 8-9 in the box to stop the run. It didn't look like it out there. But typically, when you're getting 8 yards a carry, I think it was 8. I think Monty averaged 8.1.
Yeah.
Sure. And I love the old, like, who is the old Ohio State coach? I'm blanking on his name. Woody Hayes, where he's like, I run the ball because when you throw it, only three things can happen, and two of them are bad. And I think people, like, dismiss that now, like, with the analytics. Mm-hmm. But I think there's truth to that. It's either going to be it could be completed, intercepted, yeah, or incomplete, and two of those things are bad. And so I love running the ball. Run the damn ball. But you would think that they would be able to run play action out of that, take a couple shots, for stretch sure them out a little bit, make some big plays happen in the you know, outside the pocket running. You know, it just never materialized. They never even tried.
But they could have set that up because – at a broader level, to win that game or be competitive at the end, the Bears have to have time of possession. And that's more than just getting first downs or stringing first downs together. So I think there is an initial emphasis of getting the ball on the ground, getting the clock moving.
You want to shorten the game.
Yeah, definitely.
Dude, call me a pussy, though.
Now, but if it's 24-10, fourth and one, they score the touchdown, it's 24-17, and he gets the ball back. I know that didn't happen. We're not saying... But there is a universe where, like, if that did happen, the game plan would have been putting them in a position where he threw the ball less than a dozen times and could have had a drive to execute a lot of shit down the stretch to get that touchdown. And I'm sure it would have been another 10 or 12 fucking pass attempts. And maybe it's a different story. But then there's a controversy, like, well, the refs, and they just didn't execute a play on fourth and one to score a touchdown.
Let me give you this stat, though. The Bears had 11 team pass attempts in a 27-10 loss. Since 2000, there are only two instances of a team having fewer pass attempts in a double-digit loss. Denver, week 12 of 2020, that was a Kendall Hinton game. I don't even know who the fuck that is right now. And Houston, week 7, 2005, David Carr went 6 of 9 for 48 yards. So it is historically conservative offense, regardless of what you're doing on the ground game.
Call me a pussy. I'm probably going to get killed for this take, but I'm okay being conservative on a primetime game against your rival in week 2.
Oh, you pussy.
I am. I'm sorry, I am. There is no urgency here for this season. There is none. All you need to do is find some dudes, which they're evaluating, the whole roster, and you need to be in a position where Justin Fields can be ready to go for his next year, for year 3.
It's like That's modified spring training.
Yes, truly is. I'm sorry. And like I said, call me a pussy. People are not going to like that take, but that is how I feel. There is a whole psychology behind this NFL thing, too. He goes out there, he throws four picks on fucking Sunday football against the Packers. Every single fucking show in America Monday morning is opening it with he's a fucking loser and he's a bust.
So
it's a fact.
I hear you on that, okay? I hear you on that. Every show would be doing that.
Yeah.
To me, when you only throw it 11 times, that makes me think maybe the coaching staff thinks that. And that's where I get nervous.
Fair.
Yeah.
Very fair.
Yeah.
However, I am choosing to go with my beliefs.
Okay. All right. But that's where for me, that's where the doubt came in. Because after all the full training camp, all the OTAs, everything, you're week 2, it's not a fucking torrential downpour. You're behind in a game when you typically throw to make sure, you know, clock management, all that. And I know they're getting chunks in the running game. But if your coaching staff doesn't trust your franchise quarterback to throw it more than 11 times, and those 11 attempts, only one of them that I remember, it could have been more, was downfield, regardless of your weapons, situationally, that tells me that they don't believe in him, and that makes me nervous.
But it could also be a situation where they want to gain trust in him. Yeah, like, sure. This is a building
thing. I hope
thing.
You're right. I
it's
hope
a
you're
building.
A bad pick in the first half too.
Yeah. It was brutal.
Yeah,
that was a bad.
When
pick.
He was throwing
That's
the ball, he didn't look good.
Back to back weeks with bad picks in the first half.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know why? There's just no need right now. You're right, yeah. Texans. Let's fucking open it up.
Okay, yeah. So they
no
beat the Texans
not to.
2-1.
2-1's great. Know,
yeah. And then they got Detroit, I
which
think?
Is which is
Giants.
After week That's three, it, yeah. You said they were 2-1. We'd be like, all right, let's.
I'm trying.
So
to
we're fine.
Yeah,
we're fine.
Yes,
we're
totally.
Fine.
Yeah,
I'm still very we're hopeful. Fine. Same thing with fucking.
And it takes guys a while to get going. Like, look,
Gordon.
Yeah,
like Gordon. Awful game. In real time, you could see he was playing an awful game. They were picking on him the
yeah,
whole
you were
time.
Saying that. Yep.
You heard me the whole time, and then that yep. was the storyline after the game.
Yep.
He made a great play early in the first half when he stopped. He batted down a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Who in well, here has never yeah. fucked up tremendously and been like, learn from that?
Right. And it,
do it on Sunday night against the Packers.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
like, it's all part of the plan.
Yeah. Okay. That's and you know, and quarterbacks, they and not all development is linear, right? Like you now everyone like myself does he say that?
That's literally word for word.
Okay.
What
Who?
So Rick Hahn.
Oh.
But like if you look at guys like you know, I just had this tweet yesterday, but like I was super wrong about Jalen Hurts. You know, like I thought he sucked, like I never believed in him coming out of I never liked him at Alabama. Now he's like a good he's a very competent, above average NFL quarterback. All Fields has to do is get to that level, and I think he can do that. And you same thing with Tua. People were burying Tua. Tua's dead. Tua's done. He doesn't have it. And then all of a sudden, you had a new coach. You got a couple of elite weapons, and it's off to the races.
I mean, no, elite. One way.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill yeah. and Jaden Waddle.
Yeah,
just run straight. You can't cover them.
But they run. They run 1,000 miles. Per hour in every direction at the drop of their hat.
I know.
Like they're freaks.
It's incredible.
So yeah. they, like those, because he's hitting open guys.
Yep.
And they're scheming them open. So I do, like, it's way too early to give up on them. And guys make mistakes at the podium and on the field. And I think everyone just relax. It's like, let it, maybe saying it's okay, it's going to be fine is a little optimistic. But just let it play out and don't let this, like, derail anything.
If you've given up on him, it's fucking
crazy.
Oh,
it's insanely unfair.
When can you
he
start?
He started 12 games and 10 of them were with a fucking bonehead.
I don't think a lot of people have given up on him. I think it's just like a number.
I know.
It's just the people that are willing to say that out loud.
Say this. I am for the first time.
And that's where I feel like we're – that's where I kind of feel like we're
– cater to
yeah,
them too
I feel
much.
Like we're kind of
really
straw
sitting here
yes.
like sucking fucking – I don't know. I don't want to like give these people too much. Like I think that you guys are wrong and – you know what? I'll take it a step further. Fuck you.
That's how I felt about the press conference. I felt that it was just kind of a straw man where there really wasn't this belief. But I
yeah,
I don't know.
It was they were if it's small, they're very vocal.
You can understand
very
where
vocal.
It went. Like whole thing makes sense. Don't necessarily like it. Everybody relax. Beat Lovey on Sunday. Has anybody been to Lambeau?
I went
to Lambeau for the first time this weekend, and it blew me away.
Yeah,
I've been there.
Fucking move us
twice.
Out to Arlington. All I could think about standing there was like, God, give us something like this. Give me something like this. It is so big. The mass and sea of people is – I didn't know it was like that at NFL games because I haven't been to a lot. Like, your experience is going to Soldier and then going to Lambeau is like, whole. I'm not joking. It's like – I can say this 1,000 times and I won't be saying enough. It was like, holy fuck, this is so –
it's cool.
It's just so big and cool.
Yeah, I think it's the only – the only NFL stadium where it has like not like it almost feels like you have to make a pilgrimage there because it's so old. It's like a Wrigley or a Fenway where it's like you just you want to kind of get to Lambeau because the history there and it's a good viewing experience.
How's
a good tailgate experience?
How the fan base up there to Bears?
Dude, they were fucking great.
I've heard
they
that
were
they're
great,
they were
fine.
Super welcoming.
Yeah.
They were great.
I
fucking hate Packers fans.
Well, I mean, most of them too are not like when we think of Packers fans too. You know, it's a lot of like our experiences and peers and like you're like thinking of like 30-year-old guys that talk shit to us on Twitter. But for the most part, I'd say like 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 5 Packers fans are like, you know, 50 and older walking around in Brett Favre jerseys being like, hi.
I went to the week one of 2018 where Rodgers came back from halftime, ripped our guts out. And I was
that was Eddie's video.
Yeah,
I'll be taking a shit here and there, and I'll just
oh
pull
yeah,
up those
you went
videos,
to that.
Can
yeah,
laugh at myself.
And that was like, I was like, obviously over the moon in the first half. Khalil Mack, you knock out Rodgers, like everything, like everything's fucking great. I was having the time
game's not over yet.
Having the time of my life. And then I remember, like, I got back to my seat, way easier to take a piss at Lambeau than at Soldier 2. But I got back to my seat and I sat down and, like, wasn't like they're coming back from half and you hear like this roar and I knew what it was and I was like, fuck. And then everybody that was probably annoyed with my cheering just like would give me glances as things, like they knew what was coming.
Oh yeah,
dude. And it was like, fuck. And I did, when I was 19 or 20, I went to a Jaguars Packers game. One of my good buddies is a Packers fan. We went up last game of the year. It was -6 degrees at kickoff, and maybe the worst experience I've ever had in my life.
See, that's the that only time I like awful. Cold weather. I've been to two Jags. Of the coldest Bears games ever.
And I was so I was much unprepared.
Jags Packers in January sounds just about as bad as anything.
It was bad.
I do want to give a shout out to a man named Chuck for a second. Chuck is a Packers fan. He's an older gentleman. I was taking a picture of a bratwurst, and I was holding a beer in my camera, and this man came up to me, and he was like, excuse me, sir, can I help you? And I was like, And he's like, no, let me take the picture for you. And I was like, yeah, sure. He's like, I know I'm old. I know how to work those things. You got your hands full. So he took the picture, and then he was like, is this okay? And I was like, yeah, it's great. And he gave me the phone back, and he was like, no problem, buddy. Enjoy the brat. And he was like, in a Packers
jersey.
How
was the brat?
I was like, damn, Chuck. Chuck, dude, what are you doing? Are you guys playing psychological warfare on me right
now? I would be freaked out, too.
The brat was so fucking undercooked. It was the worst. Disgusting. It was the worst in-game food experience of my life at any level of any sport, really? Professional, amateur.
And Soldier's not good either.
No, they Soldier's can't be bad. Serving that. Yeah. I thought that that's how people in Wisconsin like it was raw. Ooh. I had half of it. I don't know.
That did not look good. I don't know. How do you not get...
How do you not nail the brat? The brat has to be flawless.
What's it? Is that a football
thing? But then people said no real Packers fans are in there eating brats because they filled up on them in the
I did
lot.
See someone had like a cheese curd with ranch and like the cheese sauce. It was like a nacho little
that's interesting.
Tray.
That's nice.
And it was intriguing. Yeah,
how about this? The tailgate lot we went to, they have like a big tent and the tent is connected to the bar. Bar is much smaller. The tent is gigantic. It's like the outdoor or whatever. And so you walk in, you get a wristband. I don't know what you pay. We just had the wristband. Somebody was like, here you go, here's your wristband. But there isn't like a bar. They just have folding tables. And the folding tables are just stacked with solo cups filled with beer with labels in front of them. Miller Lite, Spotted Cow, and like 10 different beers. So all you do is you just walk up and take as many beers as you want for as long for
that's pretty
the whole
cool.
thing. You don't have to talk to anybody. You can just
I've
go
decided
up and
I'm
take
going
beers.
Next year.
It was probably the most like accessible tailgating experience I've had.
It's great. Yeah. I have one other thing about this what? Justin Fields thing.
Okay,
let's come back. Mention Barstool.
Just quickly,
he did.
Okay,
yeah,
he did. The like Jersey Jerry just tweeted out like the picture of the guy who was going super viral. Like, oh, like I've been dealing with this. I've only been with you talking to like the girl filming it for 2 months. I've been dealing with the Bears for 22 years. You guys see that?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So super viral. That guy's like a professional TikTok guy. He's got 500,000 followers on TikTok. I thought that video was clearly staged. And it's like you take a video from that's going viral on TikTok by design and put it on Twitter where it's wildly different audiences and people don't realize that guy is a stand-up comedian who was doing it for a reaction. And like looked scripted, looked fake, and people are buying it hook, line, and sinker. Like that guy, that's what that guy does.
Like, I liked it.
Yeah, but like you can like it, but it doesn't mean it's like off. It didn't feel
authentic. So Jerry ripping on this guy as a Barstool.
He's like being like he's taking that guy's side, not knowing. And I've seen a lot. That clip went super viral. That guy is just like he's a stand-up comedian who does this like for a living. So like even that guy is not being like super genuine. He's like capitalizing on Bears. Like he's just reading the room.
Yeah,
and manipulating the audience. Like it's not a real take.
But now Jerry's taking that.
Yeah.
And now,
well, a lot of people.
I have an announcement really quick. The tweet was deleted by Barstool Sports.
No, I've been doing damage control on my phone over here talking to people from the Bears. So about Justin Fields. So yeah.
Well, like, inside baseball, you wanna spill any beans here?
No, I don't wanna say like who said it, but or who I was texting with, but he was like, yeah, like he's very annoyed with like he would say not pissed but annoyed at the main account and like people harp and I'm like, well, we have 200 people who work for the company. Like it's more like that came from New York. It didn't come from Chicago. Like,
yeah.
That guy,
I
you know, so
yeah.
What do you it, I'm just saying. Like, it's
that doesn't represent anything right. close to what we feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he did mention Barstool by name in that press conference.
He did.
No, we are big.
Mm-hmm.
Dave is huge.
I am big. That is true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what, though? To be fair, like he said, though, it's like a good thing to know. I just saw he said, I don't want to be as much of a robot. I do want to show you guys my personality. So
I saw that, too.
I think we made progress on this little non-issue, non-story.
Yeah.
Are you looking for relief, relaxation, or to party on the motherfucking moon? Then check out 3Chi's new True Strains lineup of cannabis vapes and gummies tailored for specific effects. And the best part? It's delivered straight to your door. Visit 3Chi.com. That's 3CHI.com. And for a limited time, get 20% off with the code BARSTOOL20.
What else? There's a fucking bomb we got to set off in this room, but what's when do you guys want to do it?
I feel like we're like the wire cutter guys. You know, like the bomb squad coming in. Yeah, like we need sweat pouring
out. I just pit my stomach like I have a conditioning test. In like the afternoon, you like wake up in that morning and you're just like, I know I got to do this. I know we got to talk about White Sox.
I don't think there's much to talk about.
Oh, David.
He was chipper when I walked in.
I swear to God, I'm in a great mood today.
That therapy's paying off.
I haven't gone back to Dr. I think you pronounce it.
The shock hasn't set in.
No, it's...
It's a guy coming out of a car accident who's like, my neck is fine.
This is the truest thing I can... Like, truest analogy I can make. I swear to God, it's like putting your dog down that was really sick with cancer and was 15 years old. You know it's for the best and... Like, it sucks. The season's over, but there's just a sense of relief.
I think that's a terrible analogy.
That is why is that?
One of the worst
analogies. You know that it's a good thing. And the
yeah,
roller
but I would never
that,
be like
not comparing
fucking.
No, I'm not saying to my dog. I'm not saying it's that you're ever happy when.
Why don't
a dog
you try
dies.
That
you just
analogy?
Said you're happy.
Why don't
it's
you
your
try
relief.
That analogy with the other side of the room?
You just outed yourself as someone who takes joy in putting down 15 year old.
You just know it's the correct thing to do.
No, I just put the microscope that way next time you talk
please.
About dogs.
Please, Ed. You don't like dogs. You've said it 1,000 times over.
You just said you're relieved when you put a dog.
Yeah,
I mean, it is a sense of relief when a dog is suffering.
Yes.
And it's the humane thing to do.
But it doesn't take any of the hurt away.
You're in a great mood. What, vacation? Bonus? Nah, I just put my dog down for 15 years cancer.
No. I mean, I'm not saying I'm in a good mood because the season's over. I'm saying it's just that there's a sense of relief.
How about this?
And I know that.
Can I help you?
Like, my emotional swings are no longer going to be here.
Can I try a different analogy? You've been in a long relationship. It's bad. Swing back and forth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
You make a breakup. You decide to make the breakup. It's a hard decision, but you make the breakup. And then that next time out when you're out with the boys, you feel...
You want to go have a little one...
I'm good.
A weekend with the boys?
No.
With the fellas?
No, but I'm saying like that first moment where you're like, all right, things are going to be okay. That's where you
That's
are.
That's exactly
your dog
where
is not dead.
Okay.
Okay.
You understand what I'm getting at, though.
Just trying to help you make a little bit better analysis.
The season's dead.
Yes.
It was a cancerous, dying dog of a season, and the season is now dead, and there's just a sense of relief. Like, I did the right thing. Like, I've accepted.
You let go.
I've let go.
Mm-hmm.
I miss the dog, and I will miss the dog when game 162 happens.
No fight. No fight.
That
dog didn't have that dog in
it. That dog was... This dog really turned.
I don't know if we can read this out loud, but we just got an email from the big man that went to the entire office saying, if you're going to get strippers, it needs to be approved by me at the end. It needs to be approved by me, end of story. Strippers at the office. So, Ed, next time you're thinking about getting your little...
It's actually good to know.
Honestly.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
We had fin doms at the old office.
That's what I'm saying, dude. Yeah. I had the we want to continue?
I don't. Yeah, go please.
We had the remember that guy who got walked around the bean on
yeah.
the leash?
Yeah.
That woman reached out to me today, actually. So it's ironic you bring up the fin doms.
Are you going to ask Dave if you can bring him in here?
I don't think she qualifies. Right? Like if she doesn't like if she's not.
He said adult work as well.
Yeah, but if she's not in lingerie and she's just in like street clothes, like I think that's fine.
I think
especially off duty.
Yeah.
Are you still going to ask Dave though? Just to
I don't think they know or care what happens in this office.
No, they don't. Agree.
Yeah,
so, we could have a bunch of hookers walking in and out of here.
So I don't think it matters.
I'm not canceling the hookers tonight.
But anyways, White Sox season's over. It was a complete dumpster fire. I'm glad it's over. The emotional roller coaster was not good for my health. And anyway, White Sox fans are fucking furious. We talked about how Rick Hahn was trending. I clicked on that trending link. A lot of people calling for his heads. There's blame to go all around. From Jerry Reinsdorf through Kenny Williams, Rick Hahn, Mike Shirley, the scouting staff, all through the 26 man on the roster, and they got a lot of work to do this winter. And when the season is officially over, we can get to that and what I think they should do. But I have a very, very, very bad feeling that they're going to try to run it back with this exact same group. Because
that's what I was going to ask.
Everybody is getting more expensive. Eloy, Yoan, who fucking sucks.
Right.
Other players, Lucas Giolito, he's in his last year before Arb. Grandal was horrific this year. He's got another year at like 18 mil on his deal. So they got a lot of work to do, and the only way to do it, you can make a few trades. There's a couple guys that have some value, not many. But you got to throw money at it, and I just have seen this story and movie before with Jerry Reinsdorf owned franchises, and I don't trust that he's going to do that. So I have no idea what they're going to do. I know what I would do. I don't know what they're going to do. But they got a lot of work to do, and Rick Hahn is going to – I mean, he's the only one that's going to face the media and face the microphones and cameras and all that once the season's over, and he does give his postseason presser. And he's going to have to spin this as lawyer-like as he possibly can, because the fan base is pissed, and rightfully so. And if they run it back with this same group, a very flawed group, though the talent individually is very good, they're going to lose a lot of – I'm not getting season tickets next year. Why would I waste money on that shit? Mm-hmm. I paid $10 for a ticket last night and sat 20 rows up behind the dugout thanks to Game Time. So it fucking sucks. But it's self-inflicted. It's their own doing. They fucked up with their managerial hire. They fucked up with signings and trades and not opening the piggy bank when they needed to. They fucked up many, many ways. And the saving grace, the one saving grace, is that all these players, for the most part, are still young. And like Eloy Jimenez looked otherworldly good in the second half.
I mean, any credit to the Guardians for being a better team?
See, that's I was arguing with Indians fan or Guardians fan today, over the last 24 hours or so, and he's like, the talent. If you look at, can you name Carl? Mm-hmm. We'll go half 13 players on the Guardians.
Maybe I
don't exactly.
It's a very specific question.
It's a very specific question, but my point is that like the talent from right 1 now. Through 26 isn't any. It's not that good.
I mean, that's not fair.
It is fair.
They're the youngest team in Major League Baseball. They're mostly homegrown guys. They have the lowest strikeout rate. They have the highest contact rate. They're a completely different team.
They play,
but that's what the Guardians built. I'm just trying to wonder if there's any regular amount of credit to them for creating a different type of team.
No, of course. Of course.
Because they're much different than all the other teams that will be in the playoffs, and people have been shitting on them, but they're different.
They are a better team than the White Sox. They're talent.
Some of the lowest power numbers.
Exactly.
Very low power numbers, which is atypical. So
why is that atypical?
Because a lot of teams are on a power surge and want to play players and get plate appearances, the guys that drive the ball.
If you're a team that just looks to make contact and put the ball in play, you have to rely on a lot of batted ball luck. And that's what the Indians had this year. They had the highest BABIP in baseball by far, last I looked. Which, if you believe in that stuff, which I do.
But I think there's an element of like having a grosser approach to hitting line drives.
I'll tell you this.
So you're going to have a higher BABIP if you're trying to hit line drives. You're going to have a lower BABIP if you're trying to hit fly balls.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but if you're putting the ball on the ground, how are you going to? It's you know how hard it is to string 5-6 hits together and against professional.
Well,
pitchers?
I don't know, Dave. They're going to win the division, so I think the strategy worked.
Of course it did. I've given the Guardians nothing but all the praise in the world. 1 through 26. It's not that they got Ramirez. Yeah, they got a couple of stud pitchers, including the classy at the end of the bullpen, who's just fucking filthy. They have talent, but it's
they have the best player in the division by far.
Yeah, that's one player.
Yeah, I know, but like that is a great starting point.
Okay,
who's, you know, cheap deal. Then you've got a good shortstop in Rosario. You've got
he's good. Come on, good. What's your definition of good?
Fucking better than what you guys have been splitting up since. Okay, Elvis Andrus. People say Elvis Andrus is great. Yeah, he's played well.
He's played incredible, but you're telling me that.
I mean, Rosario just won the division. Straw's had a big second half.
You are not listening to a word I'm fucking saying. Well.
Hold on.
Barstool Sports and Foreplay have partnered up with Skillz, the leading sports skill training brand, to develop co-branded golf training aids that will help you improve your game. The Skillz Barstool Golf line was designed to help sharpen every aspect of your game from tee to green. The products help you develop your swing, whether it's gaining distance, improving accuracy, chipping around the greens, or dialing in your putting. All products are made by golfers for golfers. They were developed by industry experts who understand the game. Skillz Barstool Golf products are now available at golfgalaxy.com/barstool or in store at Golf Galaxy and select Dick's Sporting Goods House of Sport locations.
What is the word that he was trying to say? What are the words you're trying to say, Dave?
What?
He said he's not listening to a word I'm saying. Or you're saying.
Okay, wrong Rosario. Rosario,
he's hit like 280 over the last 25 games. Or
something. Oh wow, that's fucking crushing him, man. 280. Well, like,
I just said that they're like a high average.
He's as average as you can possibly be through 140 games this year, 620 play appearances. He's got 2.4 wins above replacement and a 104 weighted runs created plus. He is 20. He's going to be 27 and 2 months on the from
great,
exactly
dude.
From today.
Fucking cheap shortstop putting up a productive season and the productive, Guardians
he's
are
average.
Filled
I just
with those guys.
I didn't say they're a better team than the White Sox because they play like a good team. They play clean, fundamentally sound, well coached, well prepared baseball. Talent individually from player 1 through player 26, the White Sox have more of it.
So
they
then
have
does
a
that diminish
roster.
Like your
shut up. They have a dog shit roster construction, the White Sox do. The Indians have a great manager. They got a great, great organizational pyramid that everybody buys into. The White Sox don't. It's a million different cooks in the kitchen. Nobody knows what the fuck's going on. They got 18 DHs on the team. But Andrew Vaughn's a great player. He'd be probably, outside of Jose Ramirez, the best player on that roster, in that offense. Tim Anderson, he's been hurt. He's without question a better player than Eddie Rosario.
What are you laughing about?
Like, what you're just trying. Yeah. Of course they're a better team because the record is
the Indians.
I'm never going to stop doing that. It's just Freudian slip. Sorry.
Excused.
You are what your record is. Of course. The Indians, the fucking Guardians are a better team. No one's denying that. Talent-wise, it's not as good as the White Sox.
Well, I don't think you can say that. It's like
you absolutely can say that.
Well, it doesn't matter how raw talent you have, right? So
yeah.
I think the big problem here is you're like, oh, they have all these DHs. Well, it wouldn't matter if they had all those DHs if Eli was mashing, if Robert was mashing, if all these
guys absolutely would.
They would probably be in the playoffs if those guys were as productive as their talent would suggest. But they're not.
Been. They have been.
Eli has been.
Have you looked at what Eloy has done since he's been back
he's been back.
80 or 90 games or whatever?
I get what you're trying to say.
He has been incredible.
Has this core lived up to their
he's just
what
saying,
their talent?
Like talent. Like it's like the same thing with that fucking Eagles dream team. Like they had all those guys and they were like supposed to be unbelievable. Talent wise, they probably were the best roster on the
end. So I'm introducing the Guardians as part of this to say, how much does it offset the fact? Yeah,
I'm not
White
saying
Sox
the White Sox are a better team. They're not as good a team as
the
Cleveland Guardians.
Oh, sure.
Have been good enough to and where to you me, could say as a White Sox fan, where it's like, yeah, sure, you guys didn't meet your potential, but the Guardians are also fucking good. It's not because
they're going to win 85-86 games in a dog shit division. They're not that good.
Sure, he could probably give them a little bit more respect. Some of their players, maybe. Like, if you watch them closer, I'm sure you would.
I watch them regularly because my team plays against them 19 times a
year. In my opinion.
And then I was watching them against the Twins constantly over the last month.
In my opinion, I think the much more interesting discussion of everything Dave said today is I watched some of your Instagram Live yesterday, and you said, I don't even know if this is the core. I think it'd be more interesting to go through this and be like, hey, can we set up like a meter of where you're at with some of these guys?
Go ahead. Take that upon yourself.
How should we set the meter, Carl? Like almost out,
I'm out on Yoel Moncada. Fuck him.
Well, hold on.
We'll give
him
the
list.
Give him the 2080 scale. The 2080 scale is what we'll do most that. Comfortable.
Can you explain that really quick?
Yeah, so for our audience, the 2080 scale is what Major League scouts use to evaluate tools on baseball players. A very, like a Hall of Fame talent would be like 75.
Like something Billy Hamilton's never,
David,
got an 80 grade
David,
speed.
Something you've never seen before would be 80. Average is 50. You shouldn't be on a baseball field if you have 20 or 30 anything unless you can do something at like a 7. So it's just a metric, but they do it in groups of 5. So you'd say I'm a 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 55, 60, 65, 70, 75, 80.
Yes. And if you want to go out, almost out, and not out for idiots like me, that's okay too.
No. 2080 scale only, Dave.
All right.
I'll tell you if it's good.
Yes, Monty Grandal.
I'm not out. I'm not in. Does it have to be black and white? Well, I mean, it's an Ed scale right
now. I mean, you could expand on your thoughts.
I'll go on Grandal, only because it's 1 year deal. They could cut bait, no problem. I'll go 50 on him. I think he can bounce back offensively after an offseason getting healthy. I'm right in the middle on him. The only thing is he sucks defensively now.
Obviously, I know we're going to say Eloy Jimenez.
That's sheer health. And he has to, if he DHs next year and plays 130, 135 games, then I'm 65 on him.
Luis Robert.
Same exact thing, 65. It's all about health.
Andrew Vaughn.
Vaughn stays healthy, and I think he's going to keep getting better. I'll go 70 on him. Whoa. He's good. I'll say this, and I'm going to break this down much, much more once the season ends. He should be the first baseman next year, and they should let Jose Abreu walk.
Ooh. Okay. All right. So you're out on Jose. Thank you for your service.
I'm not out on Jose. I love Jose Abreu, but you can't make the roster work.
Last night, runner on second, down one.
He's a fucking Abreu, man. 5-4. Give the man a statue and retire his
pumps
number.
A liner 78.
Right. He's had a great run, but your run is over.
Two fucking
you can't
strikes. Must win.
Have game. Him, Eloy, Vaughn, Grandal, Sheets.
I
can't
I
have
think
him.
Everybody
he's the free agent.
Agrees with you on
yeah.
that.
Nah, yeah. A lot of people don't because he's the best player out of them. He's been the best player like
but
offensively.
If you're trying to build for the next 5-6 years,
right. You can
he's
use
not
his
a part of that.
$18 million and go get a real right fielder.
Right.
That's
Bryce Harper.
Where I think, don't even get me started on that fucking offseason.
Next. Yoan Moncada.
Fucking 30. Actually, 35 because he plays outstanding defense still.
What do you think about these so far?
I think Robert and Eloy are very high because Dave has always said the most important statistics games played. Availability. The best ability is availability. And Dave's given two guys that are never fucking there.
I said as much. It
so
all
that's
depends
what I'm saying,
on health.
But
I'm assuming.
But
health.
I know it depends on. Oh, okay,
can you
factor in the health is going to piss you off? I think they're closer to 50s. I think they're 50s. I think
which
Eloy's
is fair.
A 45.
No,
but the
fair.
Fucking problem is when Eloy's hot,
he's
so
has been
big, man.
Fucking
so you don't even know what you have. Like, all right,
at
the Cubs non-tendered Kyle Schwarber after 2020 in the COVID shortened season because he hit 188 and was the lowest. Still fucking got on base at a 308 clip. Still slugged 383 with a 188 batting average, which is just utterly preposterous to think about. And they non-tender him for $8 million. And the sentiment was like, if he gets his potential in a spot where, you know, they're not moving, just go play. All right, hits his 40th home run yesterday for the Phillies, obviously.
$75 million
fucking
deal,
awesome,
right?
Dude. Yeah. He's going to do – he's – Eloy Jimenez very much can follow that same thing where people are like, well, this
fucking
guy.
I mean, he's extended
guy.
Through like 2030.
To the extent of he just can just go play. He just needs to play. They just be fucking healthy, but I know that's really frustrating.
That's honestly, I think it's like a sixth tool almost.
Are you like a year away?
These guys take it's like you can tell the guys that are consistently unhealthy is not on accident, they do not take care of themselves.
Tim Anderson and Luis Robert, come on.
Now, there's some instances where it's like you can't do shit about that. There's some stuff you can't do shit about. Mark Pryor getting hit in the fucking
elbow.
That's
what I'm saying, though. Remember when the Cubs got to the point where they're like, hey, we can't count on him? Like, whatever he gives us is gravy. Like, we're just going to.
It's extra, yeah.
Yeah, like, well, what point? Are you a year away from that? Like, another year of injuries from.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be, right?
I mean, I'm almost there already, but, like, I these guys are here to stay. These guys that are signed long term, so I have no choice but to just pray they're going to be healthy.
Yeah. But if you could, you would. If you could. A rebuild would probably be not a rebuild, but
retool.
Like,
oh, 100%.
Fucking Moncada's getting $49 million next 2 years. That's
no,
yeah, 24, 22 and then 25.
It's 17 and then 25, I believe. Okay. Sport, but I mean, that's semantics. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, and he is a fucking loser. He's a losing baseball player.
He's a bum. He's a bum. He's a bum.
I watch Elvis Andrews play baseball. Not some super tooled up guy. Elvis Andrews plays exactly like all 26 players on the Cleveland Guardians play.
That's why he's been in the league for fucking 16 years playing middle infield.
Love this guy, and of course he more or less saved the White Sox season. He's the only reason they were even in the playoff chase on September 20th. He just does all the little things perfectly.
All right, catching a cut on him.
For next year?
I mean, I don't know. We're just trying to get back. Let's get to the
who's next?
Who is next? It's hard because I really want to stick with the core. Who would you name like
Lucas Giolito?
Lucas Giolito.
I'm big time he had an awful year. Mm-hmm. He'd be the first to tell you he had an awful year. I am going 60 on him. I think he's going to have a huge bounce back. I think a lot of the reason, and I started writing this in the blog that's going to come out later, a lot of the reason that he struggled this year is he gained so much mass, like physical mass, that I think he lost like flexibility, and that's what the reason his fastball velo dipped. But he's only 27, 28 years old. I think he's going to have a big bounce back, and he's going to come back looking physically different, and he's going to be back to 2019 through 2021 Lucas Giolito. I have a very strong belief in that.
Kopech.
Okay. Before we go into Kopech, let's talk about our friends at Manscaped.
Manscaped. Man, smooth sack summer slowly coming to an end, fellas, but that doesn't mean your smooth sack has to. If you haven't been scaping for the summer sun, it's not too late to sweep your sack of those pesky pubes. As summer comes to an end and we enter fall, keep your boys clean and fresh just in time for fresh ball fall. Give me a good sniff.
You know, this smooth sack summer is a thing, but also sticking your hands in your pants when you're freezing cold out in Chicago is also a thing. You still want those balls to be smooth for that, too. No one wants to be coming out of that with some pubes in your fingernails. So just make sure everything's clean downstairs. Use Manscaped. They got the Lawnmower 4.0. They got the Weed Whacker. They got the Crop Preserver, which is that anti-chafing ball deodorant. They got the Crop Reviver, which is a ball spray toner. I don't know what that is. I'm not going to lie to you guys.
It's good. It's a good spray. After the shower and your balls are wet, you dry them off, and then you spray the toner on, and then that opens the pores.
Just firms it up a little bit?
No, it opens up the pores in the skin, lets your fucking skin breathe, so your balls aren't smelling all fucking nasty. I put ball toner on every day.
So no pruny balls?
I don't know if it's pruny. It just makes my balls feel like...
Well, it's worth an investigation.
Prime, like they're ready to go.
Yeah, and it's worth an investigation. So I'm going to go to manscaped.com, and I'm going to use that promo code REDLINE, and that gets you 20% off plus free shipping when you use that code. Again, the code is REDLINE at manscaped.com. So I'm going to get that Crop Reviver ball spray toner. I mean, I'm very curious about how that works. And all the other products have been great, so I'm sure this one is too. So, manscaped.com, promo code REDLINE.
Keep things smooth and fresh, as we say sayonara to smooth ball summer and enter fresh ball fall.
Fresh ball fall.
Thank you, Manscaped. All right, Dave, Michael Kopech.
Kopech, I am I'm very bullish on Kopech. He looked great in the first half. Had that one start against the Yankees. He just fucking mowed down the lineup. I think he had 11 strikeouts in like seven innings. Took a no-hitter into the seventh, I want to say. Just ran out of steam. I'm going to go – what did I give Kopech?
I don't know.
I think 60. Giolito 60. Yeah. Same with Kopech, but there is reliever risk with him. If you can get like 130 innings out of him next year at the same quality you had the first half, you are cooking with gas.
Okay. I mean, he got the extension, but obviously he's on the back half of his career, to say the least. Lance Lynn.
Oh, he's looked great.
Mm-hmm. Last couple months, right?
Yeah, he's looked like vintage Lance Lynn. I'll never be out. And this is what absolutely drove me insane about the White Sox offseason is they were worried Carlos Rodon was going to accept a qualifying offer at $18 million for 1 year. There is no such thing as a bad 1 year deal. Either he plays and sucks, and it's a waste of money anyways, or you cut bait with them and you're wasting the money anyways.
I think that's one of those things that's going to keep you up at night forever.
Yeah. I will never let them live that one down.
Yeah.
as long as I live.
Can you go? Oh, sorry, go back again really quick.
And he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. The Cleveland Guardians. He's so fucking wrong there. Well, the record.
I think he is trying to. You know, obviously he looks at it from a larger perspective. He doesn't watch as closely the White Sox or the Guardians, but I think he's trying to look at it as
he's looking at their pure record alone. They were a 85-86 win team in a completely pathetic division. That doesn't mean they're a good team. They play correctly, and they were winning in spite of a lack of talent. And
do you agree with him that Mancada's a bum?
He sucks. Yeah. I can't stand him. He's a fucking dog.
What do you think it is, though? Like, what really?
I don't think he gives a shit.
Yeah.
So like,
he got paid big already, and he's gotten paid twice now because he had a monster signing bonus out of Cuba. He was one of the last ones to get one of those, you know.
So then what do you, does he have any trade value? Like, how do you, because they can't.
No.
You can't be like for future considerations just to somebody to get him out, get out from underneath that $45 million.
You got
to
pray to God that he bounces back next year and the year after. And
that's tough.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. I feel like
guys got paid too early.
You're trying to dig while that, but you were applauding them.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, they.
Because I actually think that is like
that extension after his 2019 season where he was fucking incredible. He was a star. 25 bombs, 100 RBIs, hit .315, got on at a .400 clip and played
for a contract. Defense.
He got that contract. See you later. How can you predict that kind of shit? They tried to keep him through his core. You can't really hate on that.
Yeah, but unless like you're my only
hindsight's absolutely 2020.
Sure, but like there were indications of him being a fuck.
No.
Of Moncada being a fuck.
Being a fuck? How? What? What indications?
I feel like I don't know if we've talked.
Was he locked up by then or not? Though
I can't remember. I can't. But like,
but if, you know, back in 2019,
I like to think that if you're around a guy every single day, you kind of like
you can tell for sure.
Then they should have been able to tell. Would be my point. That's maybe
he played it off differently.
Yeah, I don't know.
Once he got paid, that's when he became a shithead. I'm not saying he's a shithead. I don't know the fucking guy. I don't know if he's lazy or not. I do know
he's
that once
he's been, you've he's been disappointed sucked. With his play.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like he's also a guy who's like, I got a bruise, you know. Like he's not like I was listening to the Portnoy show where he talked about Trot Nixon. Okay, like or he's just like fuck,
like a dirt ball. Yeah, like jersey's constantly right. dirty. Right. Yeah, you see,
I do think that, and that's like a universal truth of sports. You need a few of those guys to drag the rest of the team into the fight. And it doesn't feel like the White Sox have any of
that. 2005 team, and I hate
other than TA that happened.
Fucking 100 years ago, it might as well have been at this point. That didn't have a ton of talent on it.
No, it had enough.
It had enough, clearly. They got hot at the right time, clearly. But they had a bunch of guys that just had, fuck you, we're winning this baseball game attitudes. That TWTW, the will to win. Hawk Harrelson, anti-sabermetrics guy. I love him to death. But there are things that stats do not measure, like TWTW. And the Indians have infinitely more of it than the White Sox do. And that's why they're winning baseball games. They're not winning on pure talent alone. Yes, they have three good starters. Savale sucks. He had a 6 ERA this year. Shut the White Sox down last night. Bieber. Quantrill's all right. Like, it's not some star-studded team. It's a quality team that plays fundamentally sound baseball that won a dogshit division. And the White Sox should be embarrassed that they let that team win the division. They should be embarrassed and ashamed. And White Sox fans, until they have a winner to correct their misdoings. And if they don't, White Sox fans should continue to rub their noses in it like a dog that took a shit in the living room carpet. Aaron, there's another dog analogy for Ed.
Aaron Bummer.
Fuck him out. He was hurt all year. He stinks when he's in.
Anybody else you'd like to particularly talk about?
The highest paid pre-arb reliever in history was Aaron Bummer. Extension. That's pretty much it. I would like a few more Elvis Andrews. I did this. I keep wanting to call him Aaron Andrews. Elvis Andrews. Elvis Andrews, they need more guys that like him that are dirtbags, that know how to win, that play Sheets. Winning baseball. He's not a guy. I mean, he's fine, but he should be playing for, like, the Royals. Not a contending team. A team that says they're contending, I should say. by their own words, not mine.
You got anything else, Carl, on the White Sox?
They should be ashamed of themselves. They should absolutely be ashamed of themselves. And if Rick Hahn...
He just asked me.
I know. I'm literally finishing my thoughts. I'm finishing my thoughts. Then you can speak as much as you like. One last thing I have, and then I'll shut up. If I were Rick Hahn, because like I said, he's the one that's going to face the flames after this season, I would hold himself, the organization, don't make excuses. I don't want to hear anything about injuries, about how Eloy was hurt, how Kopech fizzled out. I don't want to hear a single thing. I want to say we are going to do everything in our power to fix this. And that mean if that means spending an extra $100 billion, if it means making a trade that hurts, like trading someone like a Cease and adding 3-4 fucking studs behind him in the rotation and on the offense, fine, like figure it out. I don't know. Just don't make excuses, because that's the first thing that if you do that, White Sox fans are going to want to burn the stadium to the ground, and they should.
Carl?
That's my 2 cents.
Yeah, I mean, White Sox fans talk so much fucking shit. There's so many people listening to this that are White Sox fans that just talked so much shit. And not even to me, just like generally group chats, like your Cubs buddies. There's so many White Sox fans in this city that have done nothing but talk a relentless amount of shit since probably the end of the 2020 season when the Cubs got banged from the playoffs and it was clear, like, And then obviously last year when they traded everybody.
We did.
And just the amount of, like, certainty and, like, well, fucking Rick, you know, and, like, showing up at the town hall meetings and, like, we're going to do this and it's our time. And, I mean.
I would be furious if I were Rick Hahn, because I do think that the ownership group made him look stupid.
They pulled a rug from under him so fucking hard.
I don't know. That's a different conversation. I don't give a fuck about Rick Hahn's feelings right now. Or I'm sorry. And I'm not saying that about you. Because I'm just going for a second about, like, the amount of shit that White Sox fans talked about their players and their team and this division, the Will Smith picture, like, us wondering if the fucking rest of the division is going to show up this year. Yeah, the Cleveland Guardians did.
They deleted that tweet, too.
Unbelievable. So, White Sox fans, individually, I'm not saying you guys have to do anything. You don't deserve a punishment or anything. But just fucking take 5 minutes and just think to yourself. And just think. Like, was it as easy as you expected it to be? Did everything go as you thought? Were you as fucking smart as you thought you were when you were running your fucking mouth about this? The American League's gonna be ours. You know, wait till we come back. We'll play the Astros next year. Like, it's hard.
So much.
It's a hard game. It's a hard fucking game. These guys are good. Everybody's good. Everybody's playing is good. It's so unbelievably hard, and it's a sport you just can't show up and be talking as much shit as White Sox fans have, unless you're fucking back in the Dodgers, a team like the Astros. I mean, even Yankees fans have looked stupid 1,000 times this year. It's so hard to do it, but White Sox fans did it. Now you guys are eating shit for it, so enjoy the fucking offseason.
That's self-inflicted.
Yep.
And White Sox fans are more fucking pissed off at the organization than anybody on planet Earth. It's disgusting. I can't wait. If you call me a fair weather fan, on Twitter or anything about this, I'll fucking rip your face off. But they're no longer at the forefront. Like, they got 15 games left or whatever. I'll watch them in passing on a Tuesday night or whatever. I'm done going to the games and spending. It's $200 every time I go to that fucking stadium.
Fangraph says the Guardians have a 96.6% chance.
I mean, it's season's over. And I'm going to flip them on tonight after I get back from Bavette's that I'm paying for, not to brag. And I hope that stadium, I hope there's nothing but beer vendors and cotton candy salesmen in there.
Yeah.
Because that's their fault. Fault.
Now a word from our sponsor, Roback.
Roback Activewear, the best activewear out there. For those of you who don't know Roback, the only way to describe Roback, best fit, best feel. They have the best performance polos, hoodies, and quarter zips, and it's just in time for you guys to be checking this stuff out for fall.
I love Roback, and I especially love, like, their whole social team and just the whole crew over there. They're big Barstool fans, and they just get it. They're just a company who gets it, and their products speak for themselves. They really do. If you've ever worn those hoodies, like, you could go out there. I mean, it's fall. Like, if you want to wear one of those to a golf course that's not too fancy schmancy, it looks great. You fit in great. You feel good. You don't look like a slob.
Fall starts today.
Yeah.
Okay. It's 50 degrees. It's fall weather. You got to be going to Roback. You want a little true story? I was on the phone with our merch team maybe like a month ago, And they're like, you know, are there any brands that you want to like work with as Barstool Chicago? I'm like, I would love to have Roback. That is a true story, because every time I see these other brands inside of Barstool wearing their stuff, I'm like, that looks sharp. That looks great. Like, all their products look awesome. So I'm thrilled that Barstool Chicago is finally partnering with Roback.
You'll love this too.
Okay.
They have a huge announcement. The brand new performance joggers just dropped, and they're taking over.
I love a jogger.
And they're not kidding. Mm-hmm. And they say these things, maybe the best joggers that they've ever made, because functional, versatility, comfortable, they check every box.
And that's another thing you need for fall. Mm-hmm. That's like prime jogger season as far as I'm concerned. So if you go to roback.com, they're giving you 20% off your first order if you use promo code RED. That's spelled RHOBACK.com. Again, 20% off all polos, quarter zips, hoodies, and tees with that promo code RED. And don't forget about those brand new performance joggers either. Like, you should be getting your whole like Sunday, fun day, Saturday college football outfit attire for the fall at Roback.
Beautiful.
And 20% off is huge.
Thank you, Roback.
I'm excited for fall with Roback.
Well, Dave, at least you have the Northwestern Wildcats to look back on.
You can go ahead and gloat. That's another bunch of fucking losers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but not a major grievance, but you should have been like, I'm surprised you didn't have a little something.
Can I tell you the conundrum, my man?
And so just for our audience, Eddie is a Southern Illinois Saluki. They played Northwestern.
Do you, like,
this week.
Root for them?
That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And, like, Northwestern's been so fucking good to us.
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, I love Fitz. I love my guy, Alex Bannon. I was like, it was just very hard for me to really.
Yeah, but easy to lean into, like, it. You're an alum.
For sure.
Just saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to wear the hat. I'm going to wear the hat today.
Yeah, I told
you
offensive line.
I'm sure you got a few polos.
We weren't going to come in here today and start doing a Southern Illinois football segment for the rest of the year. We weren't going to ask you to travel with the team.
Can you name one player on Southern Illinois?
No, but I know the head coach. I actually did a radio package on him, like real deal, like on NPR radio package on it. We should pull that and play that.
That would be funny.
It was his first year being head coach. And it's like, yeah, I'm talking like this. And, you know, Southern Illinois Salukis, Nick Hill.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
I'll find it somewhere. But, yeah, it's good. It's good for the school. It's good for the
I heard
university.
Their fans are loud. I usually go to most home games at Northwestern. I didn't go. I'm like, oh, they're going to beat Southern by 30. You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I heard the fans are super pumped, though. Good for them.
Yeah.
I mean, Northwestern also.
Yeah, I'm happy for them. So that's great. But like I said, it's hard because, like I said, Northwestern has been very good to us.
Yeah,
and I like them too. But
unless you go to like a Big Ten school,
what's going on over
like,
here?
I can't
is it a spitter.
It is a Tim spill. I know it's not apples to apples, and I know
dip it in a San Pellegrino bottle.
That's all I had.
Were you at Cortino last night?
That's a little dignified, though.
At the fucking baseball game, dropping money on that loser. Those losers. Putting money in Jerry Reinsdorf's
pocket. She's carrying
so
a liter of San Pellegrino.
He's washing it all.
Hey, you know what? I need a spitter.
I love sparkling water.
It's
I drink
great.
It like 3-4 times a week.
More serving size, but never mind.
Like, I couldn't give a flying fuck how North Central does in any sport. Like, when they're on ESPN in the national championship, I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's different like for basketball.
Because they're actual good at basketball.
They have been good.
Yeah. They've had a couple Sweet 16s, and it's D1. Right. It's D1 AA for football. But, like, I did work for the team. I'm very grateful for my time there. I haven't been in touch with them since. So.
Yeah, but it's borderline impossible to be passionate about an FCS.
Right.
Unless you're like North Dakota State or
something.
Yeah,
no, I went to the Fargo Dome when I worked for them.
Yeah,
and that was a cool experience.
Yeah.
Like going to fucking, it was the opening day of deer season.
Oh.
It was like the most empty the stadium has ever been. Yeah, I think they said there's like.
Yeah, I fucking love that.
I think they said there's like 500,000 people in like North Dakota.
I can't wait for deer season.
And like 450 of them have a deer hunting license. It was really funny. But yeah, good for the Salukis. Good for Nick Hill. He's a good dude.
And this is on the heels of them losing to a school that I didn't even know was a real school, Incarnate Word.
Incarnate Word.
40 points the week before, and then they beat a Big Ten school. Go fucking figure.
They got someone on their staff, right?
I remember they had Pat Knight, like Bobby Knight's son, was their head basketball coach for a minute. I don't know if he still is or not, but.
I'm looking it up.
But yeah, it's in Texas, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, while you look that up, Illinois plays Tennessee Chattanooga. Tennessee Chattanooga's got a big chip on their shoulder. Why? 4-13 this year. Everybody just keep your eyes peeled. That's all I got to say. Illinois football.
Illinois is actually the only team that looks any good. like out of obviously Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State looks good.
They're 2-1. They get 3-1.
I mean, they pounded a Power 5 team. That's more than a lot of Big Ten teams can say right now.
Pat Knight, Coach Lamar. That's why I had that confused. Yeah, another nondescript Texas 1AA school. That's it for Illinois.
No, I was doing that while you guys were looking your
your
stuff up. I don't have much else, but
want to talk some Bulls basketball? I don't.
No, but look, we can just quickly do Notre Dame. Can we just agree that that Tommy Rees clip was fantastic?
Oh, it was awesome.
Like that's that, like if you have a kid on the phone, you know, Drew Pine, you know, making excuses. I don't know what Drew Pine was saying, but Tommy Rees losing his fucking mind. Like, and then like the offense kind of clicked in after that a little bit. So they got the win. Good for Freeman. They got North Carolina this week. If you can't put up points against North Carolina, that's a big problem. It'll be that's on the road.
45-45 game.
The defense. Notre Dame's defense is okay.
It's been good.
They should. I hope they should win that game. I think they can win that game.
I think they will too.
But it's, you know, it's obviously a different vibe for the season. Tough day to be wearing green jerseys and having Manti Te'o come back. Like that was like, oh boy. But at least they got the win. But they, you know, it's just this is already it's a lost season. So there's not much there.
God, that's fucking tough, man.
Yeah, it's tough.
All right, so are you excited for that? That it's no longer going to be that way. We never really got into that.
No, what's no longer going to be that way?
The expanded playoff, where when it comes, because that got voted in, right?
They're going to 12 teams. Yeah.
So if it goes to 12, like you're technically not dead right now.
Oh, it's not happening this year, though.
I know. No, I know. Yeah. I'm saying, like, for conversation's sake right now, are you excited when your season is no longer dead in week three?
Because I think it makes college football worse on a whole. Like, I like the fact that every single game really matters. And so I'm willing to sacrifice a Notre Dame season here and there where they start badly for the greater good of college football. And this is I think the right number is 6. I think that would be the right number. But yeah, they're not going to be a good team. I think if they get to a bowl game this year, if they go 7-5, even though BYU looked terrible against Oregon too, so maybe that's maybe 8 I think is their ceiling, because they're probably not going to beat Clemson. They're not going to beat SC this year. Like, they're just whatever. And it's tough. It's a tough year for us. A tough year for me for sports, for fucking everything.
Do you guys share that sentiment where it's like you don't want the regular season to be watered down?
Yeah, I like this idea of, can we just give like a fixed number of bids to each conference? Like the SEC, just get 2 teams in. That's it. The top, you get 2. Big Ten, you get 2. Just keep going down, because then those games do. You're going to create. I completely get what you're saying. We're like, I want that mid-October Penn State, Ohio State to be for fucking everything.
Yeah.
I want to have those like big moments. There's just too much discretion in the playoff format. There's too much like, and I would like to have a fixed bid for non-Power 5 for the long term. Sure, they'll get fucking dusted every single year.
Like they're
the
12 seed?
Yeah, like every single year they're going to get crushed. But they're going to be a little bit better the next year. They're going to be a little bit better the next year. And then it's going to, 1 year in 2 decades, something crazy will happen, or the money. Like, I think it's a good way to kind of,
I think the transfer portal
that
will accelerate that. I like that idea of one group of 5 team getting in, but maybe they have to win 10 games or something like that.
Yeah, have a high threshold where it's not just like some 9-3.
Like, you don't have to be.
But even then, it's like, that's still kind of cool. It's still kind of cool if you have like a,
yeah, but
a for
know.
Sure blowout in the college football playoff. Like, there's still the 1-16.
I mean,
16.
There's always a for sure blowout in the college football playoff.
But they're if Michigan State historically, you know, 1-4, like if you had Michigan State play a different team, that'll be a competitive first round.
Yeah. No, yes.
You'll get more competitive games.
I agree. But you'll get more like that, whatever the, let's say it's the I don't know how they would do it, like a 5-12. I think that would probably be more competitive. Like, yeah, 6-11 or whatever. 5-12. Like, that would be more competitive than the 1-4.
Iowa loses to Appalachian State, whoever that is.
My point about the watering it down is, like, I think, remember that year that Iowa beat Michigan, and that's how Trent actually got to New York, because it was, like, that huge upset? I think that game to Iowa, or maybe it's even when Illinois in the odd year beats Ohio State, like, that means more than, like, sneaking in as a 12 seed. Like, that, like the fact that they ruined somebody's season, it adds weight to it, and it gives them something to play for. It's like, ah, well, We lost to fucking Michigan State. We lost to Maryland. Who cares? Like, we'll go 10-2 and get in. Like, that sucks.
I'm not saying I disagree with you, but there is a little something to seeing your team on the bracket.
What do you mean? Well, you want to go to 64 then?
No, like, there's going to be a bracket with 12 teams. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? There is something to see. You know what I mean? There is something to that, to seeing your little Iowa. Mm-hmm. Whether it's 11 or 12, there is something to just seeing you got a spot in the dance.
Saying that in years where Iowa goes 8-4, but one of those is beating Ohio State or beating Michigan and knocking them off, I think that's like a more memorable, more special win that you ruined their season than being like, we beat them, but they went 11-1, or they went 12-2 or 10-2, and they got in anyways. Like, it just, like, it negates, like, the specialness of that win.
Okay, my bad. I thought you were arguing something else. I thought you were saying, like, the snap bids that...
No, like, I think that's cool. Like, that's, like, obviously, that's the benefit. It keeps more teams, like, theoretically engaged longer, but I think that the season's so short that I don't know that that's as big of an issue as it is for maybe, say, like, the Major League Baseball, where, like, an expanded format keeps more fans and more teams engaged.
But you also think it's going to keep guys on the field longer, too. They're not less people are going to sit out, hypothetically.
Theoretically, yeah.
But who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. Training camp started today.
Oh, how do you feel about that?
Nah. I got, like, they showed this picture of Patrick Kane. We had, like, a first day of school type chalkboard thing. And I was just like, man, this hurts. Because it's like, what if this is the end?
The last
dance, so to speak. So, but it's, you know, this is just a year about, you know, establishing a culture and figuring out. They have a bunch of young guys who could be decent NHL players on a good team, but nobody knows if they are or not. So this is a year to find out what you have in Ian Mitchell, what you have in Alec Regula. Is Sam Lafferty a guy who can be a fourth line guy on a good team, meaning that he can be a third line guy on a bad team? You know, kind of like you're saying, like Gavin Sheets, like he's a major leaguer, but not if you're trying to win.
Yeah, right.
So they have some guys who are like, are they going to be, you know, average players on bad teams? Are they going to be, you know, guys that are worth investing in and keeping around for when this thing, when the ship gets righted? And that's really all they're trying to figure out this year. And then just play the right way. Like, they haven't played the right way in fucking years since Joel left. They have not, like, had any discipline about them. I just want to see guys be competitive and play hard and play smart. They've been, like, the dumbest fucking team in the league for years. And I just want to be like, all right, like, we're going to keep it simple. We're going to play smart. And we're going to lose 3-1 instead of 5-2.
It's pretty damn similar to the Bears.
Yeah, I would say the Bears have better building blocks.
They're a little further along.
And that is the nature of the NFL too. It's a lot. I think you can, and that we see that all over the place in the league. Like, you can turn it around quickly in the NFL. This is going to be a long project.
Yeah. Well, let's maybe they're hanging around by American Thanksgiving.
They won't. And I actually hope that they're not. Like, I just don't want to be embarrassed. You know, like, I want them to be like, all right, like, hey, you lost to Winnipeg 3-1. Not that Winnipeg's good, but you played hard and you played right. You limited their chances. You lost, and, like, let's go get it.
You want them to be hockey smart.
Yeah.
The White Sox and just baseball dumb.
Right, and just play fucking hard. Just play the right way. And I love the coach, so we'll go from there. But it's the least excited I've ever been for a hockey season.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Speaking of hockey, hung out with Roenick this week.
How was that? Nice.
The Live event. I'll be quick on this. And we don't have the biggest golfers in the room.
Everyone quiets down for controversial Carl.
I had to go. We were going to go to the Live event on Friday.
Are they trying to cancel
me and my
you?
Buddies? No one's trying to cancel me.
Okay. Just making sure.
A large group of buddies, like 26 guys, huge, spread out, college friends, this and that. And we got a party bus from the north suburbs, and we were taking it out to Rich Harvest Farms because a couple of these guys are members there. And so they had, like, passes, and they set us up for the gallery. So this was a long planned thing for, like, months. It was like, hey, Friday Live event, everybody take off work. So I'm playing golf, like, 2-3 weeks before the Live event on a weekend with a guy who works at Rich Harvest Farms, a guy who runs Rich Harvest Farms, which is, like, a big facility out in Aurora.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great job, great like an international club. People know about this place. It's very
prestigious.
It's a big deal in the golf community or whatever. So he's like, yeah, you're going to be there on Friday, right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, definitely stop by the clubhouse. We'll have a drink. And he's like, oh, you know what? I have a call with the Live people later today. do you want me to try and get you a media credential? So I was like, yeah, for sure. So he texts me after the call, says, I got you a media credential. Bring up whoever you want. So I'm like, oh, cool. We'll get to walk inside the ropes, do some fun stuff with it. So then the live people emailed them like 3 days before the pro-am. Was like, hey, does that bar, we have some spots. Does the Barstool guy want to play in the pro-am? And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure Carl wants to play in the pro-am. So he calls me. I'm like, yeah, of course. Of fucking course I want to play in the pro-am. So we go out for a dinner Wednesday night, and that's where you draft the teams. And so you get there, and they don't I don't know anything that's going on other than I get to go play 18 holes with a couple of professional golfers, and then it's the live event, and it's at Rich Arvis. So, of course, I'm in on this. I walk in. They have the pairing board, and it says Jeremy Roenick and Carl Sturck. I was like, oh, fuck yes, because that's the amateur grouping, and he is an absolute stick. Like, I don't know if you guys know. He's like a plus one. So it is expected that he shoots par.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a good golfer.
I did not know that.
So they had this big draft. All these guys are walking around. Fucking Phil, Sergio, Dustin, Bryson, Brooks. I'm talking to Brooks. Brooks is like, yeah, Big Cat just canceled me. Just really interesting. Really interesting stuff. He wasn't.
What?
He wasn't. People in his party were. They were like, yo, what's up with that?
I did get a tweet. Move over, Red Ed. Saudi Sturck is here.
Saudi Sturck's in the house.
Mohammed bin Carl.
Just saying.
Yeah.
I have good
takes on that, but I'm not for the show.
For people, Red Ed and me, I got emailed for media credentials. I said no. I'm honorable.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Well, you know what? Point. Yeah. I'm not. Don't send me down this path where I'm talking about like Saudi Arabia.
Did you meet AJ there? My guy who does the consulting, because I got invited too, and I just was like, nah, I didn't.
I didn't get invited. From. What the fuck is this? Everybody's getting invited.
So,
me.
All right, well,
that's because you did the UFC interview instead.
So we do the draw, and we get matched up with Graham McDowell and Marty Keimer, who are both major champions, both like European legends, both guys that absolutely skull fucked the United States.
Former number one player in the world, Martin Keimer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They won a US Open by 8 strokes.
Yep.
Big deal. So we get to the first tee at the pro-am. You're warming up. It's nice. Whatever. It's as nice as you can imagine. They're treating you like a pro. I show up. I get a pass. I'm sitting there having breakfast with Dustin Johnson and shit. And you get to the first tee after you're warming up. And this is the first time Roenick and I are together with the two pros. And I'm immeasurably nervous. And Roenick wastes like 5 seconds just being like, or doesn't even waste 5 seconds being like, all right, what's the fucking game? What's the match? What are we playing here? And Graham McDowell's like, we'll play a match. You guys want to play a match? We'll play a match.
Oh.
And so how many strokes do you get on the front? And so they're like, what are your handicaps? I'm like, I'm listed as a 12. I'm probably closer to a 15. I just thought 12 would be appropriate for this. Like, you're an idiot. Graham McDowell's like, I'll watch you take one swing. So I hit a drive about 285 yards down the middle of the fairway. And he's like, you're not a 12. You're much better than that. I'm like, I'm not. I'm telling you.
Like, let me fuck up another one.
I outdrive Marty Keimer with his 3-wood on the first tee. I'm telling you guys, this is very atypical for me. This would be like Dave getting on a mound and all of a sudden you're like, what do you mean you just hit 95?
Yeah.
Like, I don't throw 95, dude. I throw 91, right? It's like a complete anomaly. So I outdrive Marty Keimer. We're walking up to the first ball and I'm like, somebody's closer. And he's like, and he hits his, and then we both hit our wedges and I shank out of bounds. I'm so nervous. And he hits his like 6 feet and he's like, who's closer now, Kyle? So we had a lot of fun shit talking. That set the stage. They gave us 3 strokes on the front nine. We won by 3 holes. We beat him on the 7th hole. Roenick had like 4 birdies. Wow. We were just dialed in. Flat stick was rolling. We were talking so much shit to these guys. So Graham McDowell gets on the 10th tee and he's like, all right, no more games. You guys get 1 stroke on the back. And he's like, we do 3. This is bullshit. He's like, you guys are much better than... You guys get 1 stroke. Graham McDowell proceeds to birdie 3 holes in a row. And this is the course is unbelievably difficult.
I'm sure.
Rattles off 3 in a row. It's tied. We go into 16 tied. I birdie 16 on 120-foot putt. Oh, we go up 1. Roenick birdie 17. We're tied. We go into 18 tied with Graham McDowell and Marty fucking Keimer. And it's not like a we're playing a from...
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
This is a real... We're playing the same... Freaking course. They're about 10-15 yards teeing off behind us on 4s and 5s. We're teeing off from the same spot on 3s. So the advantage is like Roenick is literally just out there carving these dudes up. There's gonna be a video, some content that we captured for stool scenes that's utterly hilarious. You will not believe how much Roenick was into the competition.
Oh, I'm sure.
How much shit talking and high fiving and like, let's fucking go. And McDowell and Keimer were so cool about it. Like, they got in the cameras too. They were talking shit right back to us. It was the most competitive golf match I've ever played. It, by far, of getting together with the boys and like, all right, what's your handicap? Let's get a game going. We were lining up. It was so serious. So we get to 18. I had a 15-foot putt to beat him. Roenick and I both had birdie putts. They were both putting par. And they hit bad drives. We hit good. We hit a fucking awesome drive. I hit an awesome drive. And then Roenick hit a 5-wood in. And so we had fucking birdie putts. It wasn't a scramble either. We took our best tee shot. So I'm clarifying. I'm long-winded. I said I'd be short. I'm not. Now that I'm talking about this, this is like the best day of my life. Whoever you took the best tee shot and then you played your own ball in and then they played their own balls and then the low score between me and Roenick, so if I got a 3 and Roenick got a 5, we took 3 and then their low score, whoever had the lowest score won the hole. Gotcha. So we were just doing match play back and forth, and so we went into 18 all square.
So of 18 holes, how many times did you take your score?
We took I would say we took 6.
That's fucking good.
6.
I mean, did you play a supremely good
round?
He's a
plus one. Maybe 7, but we took 13 of my tee shots. 12 of my tee shots. 3 of the 4 on par. The one on the par 3, though, Roenick stuck it fucking 3 feet next to the hole in one of the hardest par 3s I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
And so he was just so down to like, he's like, we're going to fucking bury these Europeans. We're going to bury these losers. Like, don't you dare think for 1 second you're not smoking this drive. Like, the amount of coach talk Roenick had going, it was fucking sweet. So it was funny, after we missed our birdie putts, these guys were like, hey, good match. They walked right. They were like, they had a lot of fun. We were hanging out taking pictures and stuff, but like, as soon as Roenick missed the putt, they're like, oh, that's the way it goes, nice match, good push, guys, because they knew we were just gonna be talking so much shit to him. So great. That's experience. Want to thank Jeremy Roenick for that, and maybe he'll be a guest on the show at some point.
That'd be nice.
Yeah,
is he still coming here much?
No, he's in San Diego. Just launched a chocolate whiskey.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just hang out. He's like, all I'm doing is playing golf.
That's he left it. Arizona, huh?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. San Diego.
Wow.
Dude, he was so... Like, first tee, like, what? Hold on a second. Let's get some drinks. Fucking 11:30, just gassing beers with Roenick at Rich Harvest, playing Graham McDowell and Marty Keimer.
It's a great story, guy, too, dude.
Oh yeah,
gosh!
Remember that on the way to Notre Dame, JR. When he just sat next to us on the bus. That's awesome. That's very cool.
So maybe they're—I don't know. I'll ask you this: the Live people were like, "Would you guys want to broadcast?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm sure Barstool broadcast stuff." They're like, "All right, let's do a call." So I'm like, "Okay, give me your card." So this is so and so. So do you? Would you broadcast? Would you get involved? Would you put your name behind any of this stuff?
I don't know enough, to be honest with you. I don't, and I know people are going to say, "Ooh."
I just don't think it's going to work.
Middleman.
I don't think it's going to, like, I don't think people, you could throw all the money at it, you can't make people care. And I don't think anybody cares about these events.
The golfers do. And they like it a lot. Sure. So I think that's where their, like, advantage is. They fucking hate the PGA Tour. Like, those guys on the Live hate the PGA Tour. So I think that's, like, their one unique thing, if this works, is you have a population of guys that have won a ton of majors that want nothing to do with the PGA Tour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they have all that money. They don't care, do they?
Who? The Saudis?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
The money's never drying up.
I agree. I don't. But like, you can throw. It's like good money after bad, or whatever that expression is. Like, I don't. You can't make people care about it.
But would you agree? It's the most penetrable multi-billion-dollar sport industry. Like, there's no way you're doing this football. You can't do a soccer, baseball, obviously. Like, you can take an individual, set a field at a nice place, mm-hmm. and you can take the time.
Can you do it with the NBA?
What do you mean?
Yeah, you could.
Small rosters.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a way.
If LeBron was like, hey, for my last year, we're going to do the LeBron League, and everybody's going to get all this money.
Yeah.
And one got huge. Did you see that documentary?
I haven't
watched it. It's awesome.
Good? I fell asleep.
Untold
it.
And yeah. One very good one.
One endorsement, Chief.
Well, I don't, not because it was bad, but I like started it and it was interesting, and then I
just kidding.
Doze off. But yeah, I just don't. I don't know. I don't think the Live like work. Like, I don't think it's going to captivate it like that. So you have all the names. Anybody watching?
No, but down. I know. So it's like right now. No, obviously right now. But yeah. Say they go out and they play
you know, the four majors next year and three winners are on the LIV Tour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that, or two, and you just kind of keep going down this path, and then major guys defect because they're like, wait a second, I won three. A lot of the sentiment from these guys is we've won and done so much. Like, people show up for me. Like, Graham McDowell's like, people show up because Marty and I have been on four or five Ryder Cups. We're multi-major, like, multiple major champions. We, well, I guess Marty is, Graham isn't, but, like, we're huge names, and I still have to go out and play 26 of 42 events every year to keep my card when, like, just a 23-year-old kid who's grinding all this stuff. So then he's there. He adds no value at all, and there's no relative, like, way to reward the guys that have done it for 20 years that will bring crowds out, that will bring attention to it, because it's so, you know, just.
Was it crowded?
Why do they bring why do they bring
crowds out? Was it crowded? Or the field? The PGA Tour is like, there's the difference between the guys at the top and the guys at the bottom is so minuscule.
Mm-hmm.
So to be a huge golfer is like, you've been around forever and you've built a brand and you have a following. The PGA Tour is quick to be like, all right, well, if you don't have the points, you're not on the roster anymore. But some of these guys are like, what if I want to take a summer off? What if I only want to play 10 events this year because I got a bad back? So now I got to work extra. I have no privileges. I get no fucking.
Yeah, I think that's what will come of this eventually, is that the PGA will take policies and things that the LIV Tour does that works and apply them to the PGA. But I don't think, like, you're never going to get people to care about X LIV Tour event.
But nobody cares that much about the PGA events.
People care about the majors, sure, too.
No, but that take those away.
That's like,
there's only one of those is run by the only one major is run by the PGA. That's PGA Championship.
Okay.
Masters stands alone. Yeah, you're US right, Open, USGA, right. And then British Open.
Can I ask you about a specific golfer now?
Yeah.
Now that we're here, do you think Cameron Smith made the right decision?
Yeah.
Because I think that's a hard one.
All right, so. He obviously, an Australian guy who didn't grow up like in the culture of being, you know, Johnny fucking PGA golfer, I'm sure. Did he make the right decision? He made his decision. I think it's a good decision. I think if he stayed, it's a good decision. I can see both sides. It's very hard to say if it was a right decision.
Because how hot he was this year and like how many guys.
He's won two now. He's awesome. He just made $4 million this weekend.
Totally. Financially. Sounds like it was the right move. I don't know all the financials, and I'm also not the biggest golf guy, so don't get that twisted if you're listening. But I'm saying from like a visibility standpoint, he was like the fucking guy this year.
Yeah, huge, right? He hasn't won a Masters yet, and he's probably going to win a couple of them. And he's got a brand. He's got the mullet. He's got the stash. He's got cool flair. He's very marketable. I just don't think the PGA Tour is going to lift that guy up.
But with all the guys that they lost,
if they could get to a
like, it just seemed like he was in a prime position to be like, hey, all those guys fucking left. I've been having a great year. Like, he's primed to be, you know.
I think it's different for the international guys, too. Like, the fact that he's Australian is a much easier decision is my sense from, like, the top international guys were like, yeah, we'll go to LIV. There's much more debate within the top American players.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's because the PGA Tour is American, and that's the genesis of a lot of the controversy around it.
Sure, and I just think that's a question.
So I think the cool thing with Cam Smith is that he could be in a spot where he's backing LIV, winning these events, winning a ton of money, and then if the PGA Tour wants to come back and figure out some merge thing with the LIV, Cam will be right back. And instead of winning events on it, he'll still be super competitive in majors. He'll still be like a top five guy every time he goes out and tees up because he's just that fucking good. But if this does fall apart, the stain, you know, if he gets stained long term from it, I just don't think that's going to happen. The PGA Tour is so evil. Okay, listen to this. Overnight, the PGA Tour put together an extra $200 million in prize money. We're not talking about they found $200 million to go invest in capital infrastructure. We're not talking about $200 million to go buy a piece of TaylorMade. I'm not talking about $200 million to do anything of like significant long-term value for the organization. They had $200 million just sitting there to be like, all right, now that's going in the prize pool. We get it from FedEx. We get it from – where the fuck was that before? And if you have access to that easily, how much more – like what's really going on? There's a lot of questions. That was a sentiment at the Wednesday night dinner. A couple of these Europeans, I'm like, so what do you think? You know, I kept them. What do you think of the PGA Tour? What do you really think is going behind?
behind the scenes. And they're like, dude, they're not transparent about how much money they have. They have no interest in sharing it with the players. They don't reward the people that drive the stuff. They don't care. Here's a story for you. They're out at a random PGA event a couple years ago. Torrential downpour comes in, and there is a group of caddies, like 16 caddies, that were stuck in a corner underneath a tent with the players. And it was very crowded. And a PGA official came by and said, the shelter, this standing shelter, is only for PGA Tour card-carrying members. If you are not, you have to leave the shelter. The fucking clubhouse was almost a mile from the shelter in a thunderstorm. And the official was like, you guys have to leave right now. You absolutely have to leave. No they shit. Fought, and so the caddies that we had talked to were like, yeah, we ran through that fucking storm. The PGA, they literally just do not care. Or if you were like, hey, my wife needs a pass for her friend, the PGA Tour would be like, no, absolutely not. They're dickheads. And the players are, you have a huge population of players that have done tremendously well on it that are like, fuck you guys, we're done with it. So I don't think it's going to succeed in the current format it is either, but you have extremely motivated guys that want nothing to do with the PGA Tour. And if you looked at the PGA Tour leaderboard the same week that the LIV leaderboard, I mean, it's not even comparable to a regular fan that you're trying to like get the interest of. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how long the PGA Tour can do that, because then it's like, well, this guy won the Arnold Palmer Memorial. It's like, all right, dude, he's 27. Who cares? I don't even know who this guy is.
Yeah.
If you're watching on YouTube, you can see the LIV Kool-Aid pouring out of Carl's nostril that they pumped him
well,
with.
Well, I had a good experience. I'm kidding, but no. I had a good experience, and I got access to conversations that from their side that I thought was very interesting.
No, I believe that PGA
shit, dude. Sincere, heartfelt, like, you know, obviously they're motivated to be money, but it's their profession, dude. They're not out there to get, oh, I'm proud of my career because I fucking inspired people and represented my country at the Ryder Cup. Like, these guys are out to get paid. That's their fucking job. Almost every single one of those guys would be doing something else if it wasn't their job.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, hey, some golf talk on the old podcast.
Oh, you know what? Patrick Reed, who wants it? Quick. He and I had a great time together.
Oh, wow.
Patrick Reed was by far my favorite person that I talked to at the entire event.
Oh,
the
my
most,
God.
The most relatable and the most not a like not a big deal.
Really?
Like, so fucking cool. I butted up into a conversation because a couple of my friends were in it, and he was standing there, and I was like, oh, shit, I just interrupted a story you were telling. And he's like, what's up, man, Patrick? I was like, yeah, I know. What's up, man? Call me Carl. I work for Barstool. He's like, oh, yeah, nice to meet you. He's like, Riggs here. Like, no. He's like, man, you guys fucking shit on me. He's like, you guys really shit on me, man. What's up with that? I'm like, oh, well, you know, it's been going on for a while. And we talked for like a good 10, 15 minutes about his life away from golf. And I think we might be doing some stuff together. We might be going to an Astros baseball game. He's a huge baseball fan. He was like, I had to pick between golf and playing third base. And then he picked golf.
Carl. Patrick Reed and Ian Poulter just rolling around.
Ian Poulter, great guy. I had a nice conversation with him. I swear, name him. We had a great time. I made the rounds.
This is full heel.
We'll see. I have no skin in this game. There are people that are very passionate about this. I get it. I don't want to offend anybody. That's your own opinion. It's America, free speech. If I want to go hang out and play golf with these guys, it's totally within my right. So, totally.
I mean, that's what the Saudis stand for.
I mean, that's just a preposterous thing to say.
Where are you going?
Preposterous.
I told you guys I had to be out of here by like 2-ish.
Oh.
Sorry.
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 Our bad.
And it turned into a four-play pod, which is fine. It was a good story. I love Jeremy Roenick. Fun guy.
All right.
No, well, I know. Sucks, Dave. We'll let Dave pack up.
Yeah, I'm back up.
I don't want to rush him. White Sox, season's over.
It's done. Can you say all gas, please? Are we,
yeah, all gas.
No breaks.
DJ, play that shit.